It was Sunday, May 12th. The year was 1918, 103 years ago. Just 2 miles north of our church at Camp John Wise on the evening of that Mother's Day, there was something to write home about. Something that had to do with Laurel Heights Methodist Church. Camp Wise, which was located at the corner of Bassey and McCullough, still a park area today, was a training ground for maneuvering hot air balloons for military reconnaissance, a strategy often utilized in World War I. Can you hear me? Raise your hand if you're having trouble. Any trouble hearing me? Raise your hand. Can we get a little more volume, please? Thank you. Let's try that. See how we do. World War I used these reconnaissance balloons that would survey the scene and strategize accordingly. And as you know, World War I in 1918 was still raging in Europe. The young soldiers in training at Camp Wise had the Sunday off. And there was a special Mother's Day program planned for that evening, hosted by some local groups. These soldiers were far from home, far from family, far from their mothers. Some of them were mere teenagers, and surely feeling all of this in a particularly keen way on Mother's Day. Many were just weeks away, even days away perhaps, from shipping off to a battleground across the Atlantic that by then had claimed close to 9 million lives. I suppose writing a letter to family back home is as good a tonic as any for homesickness and trepidation. That's what a young soldier named Everett Chesney chose to do that Mother's Day afternoon, write a letter back home. Everett was a relative by marriage of Ann Wheeler's late husband, Bill. And he was stationed at Camp Wise. Bill's niece recently found this letter and shared it with Ann, who shared it with me, who's sharing it with you now because you're in it. We can imagine Everett situated on his bunk that afternoon, pen in hand, organizing his thoughts. After beginning his letter with some camp news from the week before, he wrote, "They are going to have a Mother's Day program here tonight." And then he described one or two of the featured presentations he'd heard was going to be a part of that event. At that point, Everett set his pen down and placed his letter on the desk beside his bunk. It was time to get ready to go to the program. The letter would have to wait and be finished later. Later that same evening, back in the barracks after the program, Everett took up his letter again and continued where he'd left off. "The program is just over," he wrote. "It was sure fine for a small place like this." And then he mentioned one specific thing and one thing only that had stood out for him in that evening's event. This is what he writes. "The ladies of the Laurel Heights Church gave each of us soldiers a flower." There you are. You're in Everett's letter, a church barely 9 years old, bringing some Mother's Day kindness to young soldiers far from home. A small thing it was, a flower. To paraphrase Mother Teresa, not all of us can do great things, but we can all do small things with great love. At Camp Wise that Mother's Day, while the training balloons were tethered to the ground, a small thing was done with great love. And for just the briefest time, it must have seemed that God was in heaven and all was right with the world. Sometimes love is that simple. And sometimes not. Sometimes our best intentions to love result in misunderstandings, broken hearts, wounded pride, hurt feelings. Sometimes our efforts to love meet barriers erected by ourselves or others. Along party lines is a phrase I wish we could banish from both our vocabulary and our atmosphere. The Jesuit priest Thomas J. Clark spoke prophetically about our country years ago when he wrote, "Community wounds, even as it blesses." Love is not always as simple as a flower given to a soldier on Mother's Day. When our two oldest children were toddlers, they had their dust-ups now and then over one thing or another, which is why at the grocery store I always use two carts, Sarah in one, David in the other, spaces in their togetherness and all that. Once I was in the produce section getting some vegetables, and somehow I had turned the cart so that the two kids were face to face. When I glanced up, Sarah had reached over and was hugging David. Like any parent, I wanted to capitalize on good behavior. I said, "Sarah, do you love your brother?"
She pulled away and said, "Not yet." Christians, do you love your neighbor? Not yet. Your enemy? Not yet. The stranger? Your political opponents? Not yet. That church member or family member who hurt your feelings a few days ago, or was it a few years ago, maybe a few decades ago? Not yet. I don't love them yet. Then when? When? We don't have forever, people. For the gospel writer John to have chosen to include this teaching about love so prominently in his gospel, the first century church he's writing this for must have been challenged in this very same way, which means John's congregation was like any congregation. After all, church is always at least these two things at once: a training ground where we're going to make mistakes, and a school for practicing forgiveness when we do. At the front of the classroom in the Jesus School of Forgiveness is Jesus, as you might expect, whose main teaching technique is to repeat fundamentals in brief phrases, apparently, such as this one in chapters 13 through 16 of John, what we call Jesus' farewell discourse. A single phrase appears word for word just this way, five different times. You ready? We heard it earlier. Love one another. Love one another. Usually that phrase follows these words or words like them: as I have loved you, love one another. You'll remember last week we said that the DNA double helix for followers of Jesus is summarized in 1 John 4:19. We love because God first loved us. Up and down the grateful winding stairs. It's in Jesus' message here as well. Besides repeating fundamentals in simple, short phrases as a teaching method, Jesus also likes to employ object lessons. You know this too. As best we can tell, the classroom where Jesus is teaching his disciples to love one another in John 15 that Anne read with us just earlier is the upper room where they've just had their last supper together. And you'll remember John describing how during supper, Jesus gets up, finds a basin of water and a towel, and begins to wash his disciples' feet. If they're still in that room now, then during the whole lesson about loving one another, there's an object lesson in the room too. There's a basin of water sitting in the corner, a rumpled towel next to it. We might say it abides there. That's a word we hear Jesus speak often in John, abide. Over 24 times, actually. Abide. Situate yourself. Make it a part of you. Trust it to become your essence. In Spanish, very helpfully, permanecer. Let it take on an inner permanence. Abide in my love, Jesus says, which in this context must mean always keep the basin in the room to remind you of my self-giving love for you. Mary Lou Kaunaki once claimed that there isn't a person you couldn't love once you learned their story. What I believe is also true, and this might be the way Jesus would put it, is that there isn't a person you couldn't love once you learned your own story. That is, that there is surely a basin and towel of someone's kindness and compassion in the room where you are. Countless gifts of love with you on the receiving end. Abide in that love, Jesus says. Then draw from it. Let inward love our hearts control. Who needs a flower from you today? A soldier? A stranger, a relative, someone about whom you have said for far too long, not yet. I say a flower, it could be anything. It could be a kind word, a listening ear, a letter home, a letter to someone who's away from home, a renewed effort to understand an opposing view. Practicing forgiveness. Just look at what happens. Look at what happens with a love like that. How it abides across generations. Take Everett Chesney's flower, for instance, the gift of those kind visitors from Laurel Heights Church who found their mission that day just up the road at Camp John Wise. I don't mean the flower itself abides. That blossom probably lasted a few days in the little tin cup by Everett's bunk before it drooped over and died. I mean the gesture itself, the kindness shown. It's been 100 years, and here we are, still repeating the story and the practice.